Good morning from Washington. This is the conference room of the executive office building that you're seeing just next door to the White House, where President Ford often holds his news conferences. This morning it is Vice President Nelson Rockefeller who has called a news conference here. This will be his first nationally televised news conference as Vice President and his first public comments since removing himself from consideration earlier this week as a possible running mate with the President on the Republican ticket in 1976. We're told that Mr. Rockefeller will make a short statement at the beginning, then take questions. He's expected to talk about why he does not want to be on the ticket next year. But beyond that, there's no indication what he will say, although there is quite obviously intense interest all over official Washington this morning as to just what path he will take. Now, here's the Vice
President. Morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to make a brief statement, then be delighted to answer any questions. Let me say that I came down to Washington. The nomination of the president to serve the country I love and to help in solving the problems which we face and which I'm optimistic can be solved. But I didn't come down to get caught up in party squabbles, which only make it more difficult for the president in a very difficult time when the problems of the country require his fullest possible attention, and therefore with his complete understanding and concurrence, I wrote him the letter. Thank you.
Mr. Vice President, can you tell us a little more of the evolution of your decision, when it first began, and how much you talked over with President Ford, and was it encouraged by President Ford?
Well, it's a subject that's been on my mind for some time as political events have developed. I talked to him about it a week ago. He understood completely the point that I've just made to you and my feelings and the reasons I came down here and concurred, and then I wrote the letter.
Vice President, as a lame duck vice president, you're in the novel position of being able to speak your mind now. Will you?
Well, first let me say that I'm not sure there is such a thing as a lame duck vice president. The vice president has no responsibilities, as you know, except to preside over the Senate of the United States. And he's available. God forbid, should anything happen to the president. Otherwise, he has no responsibilities. I have felt that my responsibility was to act as a staff assistant for the president in the interim. Wait a minute, I haven't finished the question. When I first came here, I agreed with him that I would give him my best judgment on any subject, that I would do anything I could to help him, and would support whatever positions he decided, unless I had a very strong feeling, in which case I'd speak out. And that stands.
May I follow that? You're known on the record to have strong feelings that differ from his, particularly about New York City.
Yes, sir.
And I would assume others. Will you speak out on those issues?
Well, I have.
Mr. Vice President, to what extent did those differences play a part in your decision?
No. They were not the basic element. The basic element is exactly what I said. I have differences, and if I feel strongly about them, as I did in the case of New York, I speak on them.
What are these political squabbles you referred to?
Within the Republican Party.
You elaborate on them a bit.
I don't think I need to. I think they're very obvious to everybody, and I didn't want them to be a subject of distraction for the president in his getting the nomination for the presidency of the party. I have no role. I'm not a candidate. I've said right along that I thought the president, after he's nominated, should then select his running mate. Until then, there should be no commitment of any kind or any moral pressure. And that is where I stand, and seeing people didn't seem to believe that, I took care of it by writing the letter.
Mr. Vice President,
yes, ma'am.
Was it clear to you that conservative opposition to you was so great that you would be a liability to the president? And was it clear to you that you would probably be dropped from the ticket if you did not withdraw yourself from it?
No. I don't agree. Let me explain. It's a minority of a minority. And I don't think the opposition, if I use your word, quote, unquote, is basic. But it is an issue. And it's a subject of concern to those who are responsible for the president's campaign and nomination. And it's just not worth it.
Can I follow that up? In your letter, you said the choice of a vice presidential running mate is and must be up to the presidential candidate to recommend to the National Party Convention.
Exactly.
Why did you take it out of the president's hands and make that decision yourself?
Because people didn't believe what I was saying, and the only way I could convince them and take the issue out, which was me, was to write the letter and take it out. So there was no question.
I think it's really clear, though, with respect to my first question, as to whether or not you thought that conservative opposition and the party squabbles that you were talking about were the reason why you withdrew yourself.
That's exactly the reason, and that's why I said, and that's what I put in the letter.
No questions, sir. Are any presidential advisors still sniping at your energy proposal, or did they get your message that they should either support it or step down? The message, the messenger, there is a difference.
I don't think they are. I think there's very important support now, and the bill is before the Congress. I'll be speaking to the Chamber of Commerce this afternoon. I've met with the leaders of the labor organizations, the business organizations, and I think that myself, that ultimately the Congress will pass this because I think it's the right way to solve our problems and get this country rolling, get our economy rolling, get jobs, get energy independence, and I think it's one of the most effective programs the president's
presented. Follow-up goes to the overall question, though, and that is, was the president happy with your comments on what you felt these snipers should do?
Well, he never said anything about it, so...
Mr. Vice President, you spent an hour and 5 minutes with the president the other day.
Yes, sir.
According to Mr. Nesson, your resignation or withdrawal from consideration was then discussed. Can you give us a few more details on what you and the president discussed and the back and forth in the discussion?
At that point, he informed me of his plans, which he announced, what was it, Monday night, wherever it was. Yes, sir.
Mr. Vice President, do you think that the president has written off New York State in the 1976 election?
No, I don't.
But do you think that his position on financing of New York City's problems will cost him heavily in the state?
Yes, I do.
What I see now is the consequences of a New York City default.
Well, that depends entirely on whether the Congress passes legislation which the governor, the mayor, the president, and everybody who is knowledgeable on the subject feels is absolutely essential, because there is no effective legislation relating to a default by a city, and therefore there's need immediately for such legislation.
What will be the political fallout if you are right and the president is wrong about New York City?
Well, I frankly have to say to you that the political aspects of this are far less important to me than the effects on the well-being of this country and the people of the country. And I think that has got to be our primary and only consideration.
Mr. Vice President, if the President Ford should be defeated in the early presidential primaries next year and should be forced to withdraw from the campaign for nomination, might you, sir, consider running for the Republican presidential nomination again?
That's a speculation that I have not made. I think he will be nominated. History has clearly indicated that the incumbent president is nominated by his party, and I have no speculations on the subject.
You won't rule out doing that under some circumstances?
Absolutely no speculations on the subject.
Would you be prepared at this point to recommend to the president on the basis of anything that's happened since you last considered the situation that he reconsider his decision not to aid New York City to avoid its default?
The president knows my position very well. Fully familiar with it. I've expressed it frankly and openly in meetings, as have others in expressed opposition points of view. He's president of the United States. He has the responsibility for the decisions. He has no power of action because Congress has not passed any legislation. He's expressed his position. I admire his courage. I have a different point of view, but that's democracy.
Mr. Vice President, sir, tell us what Nelson Rockefeller is going to do next to serve the nation.
Try and help the president in dealing with the problems which we face. And this is perfect example of this is the assignment he's given the domestic council to come up with a review of both policy and programs relating to all aspects of our domestic relations and the federal role in them. And that is why we're having these conferences around the country, because all the wisdom is in Washington, and you can't solve problems in a vacuum. And therefore, it's important to get out and exchange views with the people of the country and then come to him with suggestions for changing policy.
After you leave the office, what will you do?
Leave what office?
After you leave the office of vice president.
Well, I never worry about what I'm going to do next. I've always found some occupation.
Do you intend to campaign actively for President Ford, and do you intend to campaign in these early primaries for him next
year?
Well,
if you read the election law, you'll find I cannot campaign. The law says you can only spend $1,000. Okay, and that includes all expenses of travel, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The law says the National Committee cannot finance campaigns for individual candidates until after the nomination. Therefore, there is no way for me to campaign, and I have not been campaigning. I have been discussing the problems and the programs of the president with the people of this country, and I have been supporting Republican fundraising dinners around the country, but I have not been campaigning.
Well, your language, sir, do you expect to continue to do what you're now doing through next year in behalf of the president and other Republicans?
Well, you put me in conflict with the law. And that I'm not going to be under any circumstances. I'm a law-abiding citizen.
Yes, sir, could you tell us how you feel your withdrawal will diminish the party squabbles that you talked about in your opening remarks?
Because I was the basis of a lot of the squabble. So if I'm not involved, then there's nothing to squabble about.
Do you think that former Governor Ronald Reagan is a major factor in the party squabbles that you referred to?
Well, I believe in the advice that Barry Goldwater gave him.
What was that thing?
You know it better than I
do. Did you believe that if you had remained available and the president's presumed choice for vice president, it would have made it more difficult for him to be nominated?
Well, it was taking more of his time away from important subjects which need to be dealt with, which relate to the well-being of the people of this country and the problems of the world. And I came down here to help him in connection with solving problems, not dealing with party squabbles. And therefore, I eliminated myself, and therefore I eliminated the issue which was the basis of a lot of the squabbles.
And does that mean your answer is mostly yes? Question.
I think so.
Senator Mathias said recently that under pressure from Ronald Reagan, President Ford is pulling his administration to the right. Do you think, sir, that the administration, as Mr. Senator Mathias said, needs a moderate counterpoise, and the party does as well?
Well, I go back to the problems of the country. I think the American people, and this goes for Democrats, Republicans, Independents, they are looking for the solution of their problems or a framework within which they can be solved. And they're not interested in politics, and I've said this consistently for a long time. They're more interested in their own well-being, their own future, and that's what I'm interested in. And I think that's going to be the basis for the president's strength and his reelection. And I don't think that the politics are the important factor. I just think these are exciting times, they're difficult times, but they're tremendous opportunities. We must grasp those opportunities, and we must go forward. And that's why I accepted this great honor of being Vice President of the United States. I'm the lady behind you, excuse me.
Mr. Vice President, if I may say so, you seem just a bit discouraged. Do you think it was worthwhile coming down here, and do you feel that these party squabbles have kind of pushed you out?
No, that's your interpretation. I'm discouraged. I'm not discouraged at all. Never felt better. I don't think there's any vice president in history of the United States who's been given as many responsibilities and as great latitude as I have. And I am delighted, and I'm very grateful to the president and grateful to the Congress after 4 months of an interesting dialogue for the opportunity of being here. And I couldn't be more pleased, but I do not want to be diverted from the reason I came down here. That's all. So I couldn't be happier, and I'm even more happy today.
Mr. President?
Yes, sir.
If you... Of the very basic and fundamental differences you had with the administration, how can you fully support Mr. Ford's bid for the presidency next year?
But I think that democracy, if you'll forgive me, is based on the freedom of individual citizens to express themselves, and that the person who's responsible makes the ultimate decision. If I disagree fundamentally with a decision, as his vice president and with his concurrence, I will express it. Now, that's very simple. And I think that he will be nominated, and he's my candidate.
The president says that he's not worried about a challenge or a prospective challenge from Ronald Reagan. You've had some experience with the conservative wing of the Republican Party in seeking the nomination of that party for the presidency. Do you think he ought to be worried about Ronald Reagan?
No.
Do you think that he, as a result of your withdrawal, he could be less worried about it, that you've removed Reagan's principal issue of the team?
Well, I'm not involved. To be perfectly frank, I'm not involved in the political considerations or management in the White House or in the campaign, so that I'm not in a position to appraise what you're saying.
Are you, if I may follow up, you said at first that you're removing yourself to eliminate party squabbles.
That's right.
And you think that you have...
And myself from the squabbles.
And you think that you have successfully then neutralized the Ronald Reagan challenge? Is that what you said?
I didn't say that. I said I have successfully removed myself from the squabbles and removed myself as a complicating factor for the president in relation to them.
And you think the president has nothing to worry about in terms of a Ronald Reagan challenge?
I personally don't. Yes, sir.
The gentleman back. Thank you. Did President Ford ever discuss with you his concern about these party squabbles, as you're calling them, and the fact that you were the center, or at least a center, of controversy in these squabbles?
No, he really didn't. And he was, as you know, very supportive after certain statements made by his campaign manager. Back some ways, but this isn't the focus of issue and attention of the American people, and this is not where our future lies right now in these squabs. Our future lies in solving our problems and restoring the strength and vitality of America.
May I follow that? Did he at no time indicate to you his concerns that your still being available for the ticket would, in fact, hurt him in getting the nomination?
No, sir, but I have a great sense of responsibility, and I came here to help him, not complicate his life.
You said before that it bothered you that people didn't believe you, that you...
That's right.
Okay. Well, people, I'm afraid, are not going to believe now that you are not running for president. You've been running for president since 1958. You were asked before what you were going to do in this election. You've been asked before what you're going to do in the subsequent election. I wonder if you'd explain to people how you see yourself with respect to your long-time quest for the presidency.
Well, I have to say I'm closer right now than I've ever have been.
Can you tell us that you are not seeking the presidency?
Well, listen, I wouldn't have accepted the vice presidency if I hadn't been willing to take the presidency should, God forbid, something happen to the president. So look, I'm not going to kid you that I came down here with no thought of the presidency in mind. But I have no plans beyond what I've said.
Who is back into the real world? The New York banks that are identified with your family have undergone a great liquidity crisis, which has been building for some time and recently received some added blows. Now, on top of that,
The people who are politically identified with you have received very great blows the past week, Mr. Clinton, Mr. Schlesinger, and yourself, of course. Now,
I didn't receive a blow.
Well,
I told you I was released.
Particular seen in a different fashion, and so is the American working class. Now, New Solidarity has been documenting for some time the way in which you use your political empire to support your economic empire.
You made the speech. Can
well,
you tell me what the question
know is? Do you plan to use the people you still have in power, so Mr. Kissinger and also Mr. Levy, to sabotage the implementation of new thrusts towards new economic policy? I'm getting the question. Which is Chicago faction of bankers and industrialists who are mainly behind the recent cabinet shifts are groping towards now. They're groping
I have to tell you, I do not think the bankers or the industrialists were behind the cabinet shifts.
Mr. Vice President, did President Ford, in your conversation with him, make any attempt to dissuade you from your course?
No, I analyzed the situation and accepted the analysis.
Do you feel that the President definitely wanted you to step aside?
No, I think the President recognizes the amount of energy that is being spent in what I call party squabbles, and that it's not productive in terms of national interest, in my opinion, and I think he understood what I was saying, and he agreed to the course completely, and I wrote the letter.
A follow-up on the earlier question of New York. President Ford suggested in his news conference Monday night that the differences between you and the president over the subject of aid to New York were minimal. Now, we know what his position includes, and we know the positions that you've expressed in the past. Do you consider your differences with the president on this issue minimal? And can you clarify again for us whether or not you favor aid for New York City to avoid default, that is to say, aid before it goes to default?
Yes, my position was clearly set forth in my statement at the American Columbian Society, which I agree on. Feel very strongly that if the city takes the steps that are essential to bring their budget in balance in 3 years, which is the best they can do, that then there is going to have to be a period during that 3 years to help. Somebody's got to help them bridge over their financing. And I said I thought the Congress ought to focus on it and act so that that could be done. Now, he feels they won't take the steps, and that therefore the only course would be to go into bankruptcy, and that therefore they're going to need legislation. They need legislation in either case, and more or less the same actions will be taken. And I think the trustee in bankruptcy, the federal judge, when he issues certificates, which the president said he would do, those certificates are going to have to be guaranteed by the federal government. So it's going to come out more or less the same. It's just a different course of action.
A follow-up question. Some of the supporters of federal aid for New York in Congress have suggested that some of the bills currently before the Congress could be signed by the president without his having to leave his position, without his having to change his mind about what he said earlier. Do you see anything in any of the bills that are in Congress that do include any kind of pre-default aid, which, according to what the president said, would allow him to sign them?
There's been so much discussion on the subject and so many bills that I really am not up to date on those bills.
So, to what extent did you and the president a year ago anticipate or appraise the likelihood of these squabbles? You've both been party leaders for some time. Did you not see this coming down the road at that time?
Well, if he did, he didn't talk to me, and I have to say I really have not been focused on that subject until it came up.
Again, the apparent candidacy that put this into action, do you believe?
Well, I wouldn't say that was a big deal, but I think it really came into focus in that meeting you all had with Mr. Calloway. That's where it first started to come out into sharp focus.
So, Vice President,
yes,
on another question, do you think it's a good idea to have a former Republican national chairman head the CIA?
Well, I think it's up to the president to select whomever he feels is best qualified and whom he'll have most confidence to carry out a very difficult assignment, and then it's up to Congress to investigate and to the Senate and decide whether to ratify him.
Support this appointment?
This is not my responsibility, and I was not in on the discussions that led up to it, so I don't know the circumstances which resulted in the decision.
Mr. Rockefeller, when you said it first became clear with our meeting with Mr. Calloway, were you saying that when Mr. Calloway...
Not our meeting with Mr. Calloway, the press.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
When you said that, did you mean that when Mr. Calloway said that you would be a liability to the president's election?
That is
correct. That you would be a problem, and that the problem of your age was a problem to the president? Does that mean that it became clear to you...
This was his opinion.
Well, does that mean, though, that it became clear to you at that time that it was an administration opinion?
No, I never said it was an administration. I said party squabbling. That brought it into focus.
All right, you keep talking about party squabbling, but it seems hard to believe that you would be so concerned when your political past shows that when you ran for president several times, you were in the middle of the party squabbling.
Yeah, but you're assuming something that you know is not correct. I am not a candidate for the vice presidency. I've said so to you for 9 months.
Fine.
And I am not going to be, and now I've pulled myself out so there can be no question.
So that
the issue is over.
Sir,
now, once and for all. Next question.
Mr. Vice President, would you assess for us the risks and consequences of a New York state default as a fallout from the problems of New York City?
Well, as I said, I thought default would be disastrous.
No, for the state. Do you think the state is now in peril because of the city's problems?
Well, I don't know what course. I don't really know what the course of events is going to take. Therefore, it's a total speculation that, on the basis of which, I don't have enough information to make an intelligent judgment.
Right. In view of your longtime interest in Latin American affairs, what do you see in the future down the road a bit on U.S. relations with Cuba?
Well, I really don't see anything very clearly as I look into the future.
Do you expect to see any further changes in the status of your close friend Henry Kissinger?
I have no idea.
And do you fully accept the president's public explanation for the dismissal of Secretary Schlesinger?
Well, again, as I say, I was not involved in the discussions. Therefore, I don't know the basis. Therefore, I have no basis for judgment as to the reasons and the wisdom. I listened to the press conference as you did, and he said he wanted his own people. Well, believe me, that's a tradition in this country. The president wants his own people.
Mr. Departure suggests that no one's going to do battle with the Republican Party's right wing, that it's better to tuck and run.
Oh, no, that's a totally different question. Now you're talking about substance, I assume, in relation to the position the party takes. I think the Republican Party only is going to be an effective party if it reflects the best interest of the American people, and traditionally that's in the center. That's where our country's always been. That's where the Republican Party has won. It's when it reflects the interests of the people and when it solves their problems. And that's where I think it's going to be.
Can you get it there without a few squabbles? And who's to lead the effort to pull it in that direction?
Not over who's going to be the vice president.
Are you satisfied now, sir, that the President Ford's election campaign is going effectively and well?
I'm not familiar with his election campaign.
Mr. Vice President,
I have nothing to do with it.
Mr. Vice President, you have categorically and unequivocally taken yourself out of consideration for the vice presidency to avoid these squabbles. Why, sir, do you not give us the same categorical answer about the presidency?
Then what would I do if anything happened to the president?
So that is a possibility if something should happen to the president that you...
Well, how can I avoid it? When you accept the vice presidency, that's the whole point of having a vice president. Should anything happen to the president?
Not in that sense. But if he should be defeated in primaries and withdraw, or for some other reason would take himself out of it, are you then going to evaluate...
I haven't given any consideration to it.
Would you do
president?
So?
No.
Mr. Vice President?
Yes, sir.
Are you satisfied, sir?
The gentleman in front of you, I had recognized.
Going beyond 1976, do you see this as your last public office? Are you going to run again, or do you have anything in mind after 1976, since you're taking yourself out of 1976?
I have no plan beyond this press conference.
Mr. Vice President, are you satisfied, sir, with the amount of policy input you have had during your tenure as vice president?
I have to say, in all modesty, that I think I've had more than any vice president in the history of the United States.
Could you cite anything other than the $100 billion energy funding proposal to which you've had a major input?
The review of domestic policy, which is now going underway, and programs and the recommendations, which I'll be discussing preliminarily with the president this afternoon, and finally within a month. Recommendations across the board.
Thank you very much
for the program.
President.
Yes, ma'am. I just want to get this consensus.
Events outside of Washington. What are the people advising you to do, and what are they telling you?
Well, I'll say this. They're very enthusiastic, and just for those who are interested in the South, I was in South Carolina, and as you know, the governor there is supporting Governor Reagan, and he had a little fundraising cocktail party, and by which I'm always delighted to attend. And I said, how many people do you expect? We said, we're hoping maybe we'll get 250. 700 people came, Republicans they'd never seen before, and a lot of Democrats, tell you the truth. And they just couldn't believe it. Now, I have to say, that's the kind of reaction I'm getting on these trips. Now, I just don't think that people in the South are any different than anywhere else. People in this country are wonderful. I think we're so fortunate to live in this great democracy, and I enjoy meeting and working with people, and I enjoy working on the solution of problems, and I'm optimistic about the future.
Do they have some energy and farm problems outside of Washington?
Problems.
Well, do they ask you to help them solve them or use your influence with the President or Congress?
Well, I discussed with them the energy finance, the energy independence authority and how it would work and what it would do, and I have to say to you, they're rather enthusiastic about it.
Thank you very much.
It's a pleasure. Thank you all.
So, Vice President Rockefeller holds his first nationally televised news conference since becoming vice president. As expected, most of the questions centered around why he decided that he did not want to be on the Republican ticket with President Ford next year. And Mr. Rockefeller said quite simply he removed himself because he had become an issue in party squabbles and he didn't want to be an issue in party squabbles. He made it quite clear that he has some policy differences with the president over the question of New York City, but he said that that did not figure into it. He just did not wish to be a part of any kind of a party squabble, that he had come to Washington to help solve problems and not to be a part of the political squabbles, and so he took himself out. He said he supported the president, but asked if he would campaign for Mr. Ford. He said the way he interprets the law, he cannot campaign. So we take that to mean that he will not be campaigning for Mr. Ford in the coming year. He was asked also what he would do if the president gets beat in the early primaries, and perhaps would he be a candidate for president. And he said he just was not going to speculate on that. Well, that about wraps it up from here. Vice President Rockefeller's news conference from Washington. This is Bob Schieffer, CBS News.